Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, I think we've all just witnessed one of the greatest sporting stories of all time. And frankly, are witnessing, because Matt and I are watching it on replay as we record this podcast. Emma Raducanu, who was sitting her A-levels in Bromley, in Kent, 3 months ago, is the US Open champion. She is the only qualifier to have ever won a Grand Slam title in men's or women's tennis. She's the first British woman to win a Grand Slam title since Virginia Wade won Wimbledon in 1987, and Virginia Wade beamed on in the crowd in the Arthur Ashe Stadium tonight as Emma Raducanu won that title. I could go on. I really could go on for a very long time, but the records, the words, the various different forms of stuttering that pundits of all sorts have done, certainly on our Prime Video coverage tonight, I'm not sure any of it can really capture the magic and the wonder of what Emma Raducanu has achieved. So I'm gonna throw this hot potato over to you, Matt, and hope that you can have a fist at it, because I'm at a bit of a loss. It's too much.
It is too much. Yeah, look, this really is going to be something that is looked back on in 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, 100 years. This is something extraordinary that we've witnessed tonight, and this, frankly, this whole tournament. It's very hard to wrap your head around what's happened. I think quite naturally we often look for comparisons and to try and make sense of things, but there just are not any comparisons. And it's not an age thing. In fact, one of the least remarkable things about this is that she's 18. It is remarkable, of course it is, but that has been done before. Teenagers have won Grand Slams before, less and less often, it has to be said. It's not such a regular phenomenon as it used to be, but it's happened and they've gone deep in slams. But for me, it's the complete lack of experience that she had at this level. As you said, was sitting her A-levels very recently, has barely played on the tour, and this was just her second ever Grand Slam appearance, which is a record for someone to win a Grand Slam at just their second attempt. The previous record was 4, which was Monica Seles and Bianca Andreescu tied. She has halved that record. It's so improbable and implausible. And yet when I was watching, the only part of me that thought she wouldn't win was the British part of me, you know, where a sort of natural sporting pessimism is entrenched, because that wasn't the experience of watching her. To watch her was to see someone who was ready, even without the experience. It was to see someone who was good enough. It was to see someone who owned the stage and had a poise and felt like the winner. I'm a bit lost for words. I really am.
Where is David Law when you need him, Matt? David Law is in bed. I certainly hope David Law is in bed. It is 2:15 in the morning He's had a little bit of a relapse because, as I said, it is all too much. And he's got to commentate on the men's singles final tomorrow, which is also potentially a massive slice of history. So David Law's in bed. We will hopefully get his views on all things Emma Raducanu tomorrow. Although I can probably distill them into very, very pumped. If David were here, he would be very, very pumped.
Yes, he would. He would use words like uplifting.
Yes. What else? What are the greatest hits of David Law?
Good to be alive.
Yeah. Did I get my prediction right? I don't think he did.
No, he thought Emma Raducanu would lose a set.
Absurd.
Absurd.
Genuinely
David.
Absurd. Hasn't done that in 10 matches. 10 matches. She's won 10 matches to win this Grand Slam. Hasn't dropped a set. Hasn't been taken to a tiebreak. I think only got taken to 7-5 in the second round of qualifying.
Yeah. And that player is probably one to look out for. She might be winning Grand Slams next season.
Anna Bulkvadze. Read up on her, Matt, because she'll be your femme du jour of 2022. we genuinely are lost for words a little bit, aren't we? And I'm slightly distracted by watching it back. As we watch, it is 6-4, 5-2, Raducanu. Fernandez is serving at 2-5. It's 15 all. Fernandez, she faces championship points against her in this game, doesn't she? She holds and manages to force Raducanu to serve it out. And as she's doing so, she has a big slide out wide, and her knee grazes across the floor, across the court for quite a distance, actually, and it starts bleeding heavily, and she loses the point, and it ends up being 30-40, break back point to Leila Fernandez, and there's this break in play while Emma Raducanu has to have her knee patched up because it's bleeding quite heavily. Now, I'm not sure Leila Fernandez could see how heavily it was bleeding. I mean, there was a camera right on it, and we couldn't quite see how heavily it was bleeding because her knee, mercifully, was being obscured by the trainer for most of the time. But Leila Fernandez was not happy about the time it was taking to treat what looked like a really innocuous injury. And look, the rules are, if you're bleeding, the bleeding has to be stopped. You can't send sort of people with gushing with blood out there into the trenches. But it did feel like a moment where it could all turn. In the end, it ended up being a real storm in a teacup, didn't it? Perhaps it doesn't feel that way for Leila Fernandez, but let's not rewrite history. It definitely could have turned there. I think Emma Raducanu really showed something. I mean, showed another one of many, many a thing to not let that be the turning point, or at least a turning point, because she had to come out from all of that having heard Leila Fernandez have her rant at the supervisor, and she had to face a break point straight away, and she saved it, and she went on to close out the title in that game with an ace.
I think she said with a serve she hadn't hit before. She'd been trying it and it hadn't worked, and of course she came up with it on match point. That's just what Emma Raducanu does. But yeah, absolutely. Just as you say, it was a moment to praise the tennis scoring system as well, wasn't it? Because Raducanu was ahead, and yet it really felt like the match could turn dramatically and suddenly.
I love any opportunity to praise the tennis scoring system.
Yeah, me too. Hence why I've brought it up. It was sort of Andy Murray trying to serve out Wimbledon 2013 against Novak Djokovic, you know, a stressful game. He had a 2-sets-to-love lead, Raducanu had a set lead, and yet in that moment it felt so fragile and like it could all get away from her. But just as Andy Murray did, Emma Raducanu held her nerve and raised her game in that moment. And Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think this match was great and was a real answer to that sort of existential tennis question of whether a straight sets match can be a classic or an epic, because I really do think this was.
The quality was high.
It was so high.
For them to both come out for their first Grand Slam final, and maybe it is down to the fact that it was a first for both of them, that there wasn't that inequality in experience. But yeah.
And neither of them was the favourite.
Yes.
Really.
For them to play the quality that they did pretty much from the word go was astonishing, both of them.
Yeah, it's absolutely no guarantee that that will happen, very understandably. And they just showed up in the way they've showed up all tournament. And actually, it was a match which ended up pitting their qualities against one another, because Raducanu came out and had an early break, like she's done in so many of her matches, and yet she wasn't able to turn that into one of her trademark runs of games because she met the resistance and the toughness of Leila Fernandez, who just wasn't going to allow the match to become like that. And I think, you know, everyone who's been met by that Raducanu game and that Raducanu brilliance has sort of ended up disintegrating a little bit. Belinda Bencic, Maria Sakkari couldn't live with that level, couldn't meet it. I don't know whether they were just surprised by it and they were throwing their best and it wasn't having an effect, and that sort of led to them falling off a level. But that didn't happen today. Leila Fernandez resisted the Emma Raducanu fast start and made it a really, really tough match and put out her all of her best qualities. And then I was then sort of impressed by Raducanu because she hadn't faced someone who was resisting in that way. And yet, and then we saw these extra qualities to Raducanu's game, which was to, you know, to compete and to hold her nerve in all the crucial moments. It was the best of both of them, really. And it was a really great match with momentum swings and high quality. It was a delight. It was a pleasure to watch. And the rallies were just so good to watch. You know, they both play such exciting brand of tennis.
I can't stop looking at it, Matt.
No.
I only watched it a couple of hours ago. My eyes are magnetically drawn to the screen. Leila Fernandez is just held for 5-3.
Blood is coming.
Blood is literally coming. I found it, you just briefly mentioned Andy Murray there, and it struck me tonight on the Prime Video coverage and generally everything I was reading ahead of this match and sort of during the match on social media and so on, how little Andy Murray came up. Partly because this is a women's achievement, and it sounds a lot better to say first British Grand Slam champion since 2016. Sorry, it sounds better to say since 1977 than it does to say 2016. So that's part of it. But I also just think it just feels like a completely different category of achievement.
Mm.
Do you know? I'm going to need some help with
unpacking
finessing
that
and explaining that, which I'm hoping you can telepathically read my mind and help me.
Well, Murray's was all about the struggle to do it, wasn't it? It was all about getting
just
over the line.
Hauling himself across the line.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas Raducanu has sort of been catapulted herself into this position from, you know, not nowhere. People have known about Emma Raducanu's talent for a long time. And actually, I think the pandemic meant that we probably didn't see her on the tour as soon as we might have done. You know, she sort of had 18 months to develop her game, but not 18 months to show us that game because she just didn't compete for so long. But yeah, you know, with Murray, it was about just trying to compete with the big three and trying to win something that I think everyone knew he was capable of.
And he ought to. And he ought to. It would be a letdown if he didn't find a way to win a Grand Slam or become a Grand Slam champion. Whereas this is, and the predominant feeling and atmosphere. Look, I wasn't covering Andy Murray's 2012 US Open win the way it was covering Raducanu's win tonight, but the prevailing emotion all around for Andy Murray in 2012 was relief, I think. And Andy has subsequently spoken about that. And there was relief couldn't have been further from the Arthur Ashe Stadium tonight. It just didn't even creep into the corners of the court, did it? It was just pure, unadulterated joy. And yeah. I think joy is so rarely untainted by other emotions. Usually emotions are a sort of unsatisfying mélange somehow. There is so rarely a real purity to them. And I think the purity of this story and of the emotion about it all, and I think this applies to Leila Fernandez as well, is part of what's made it just so engaging and wrapped us all up in it.
Yeah. So what was needed? It's sort of nourishing to tennis. It, you know, and the world's obviously had a tough 18 months, but you know, just looking specifically at tennis, it's had a rough time in terms of soulless stadiums with no crowds and top stars getting injured, and sort of we've really had to come to terms with that in the last few months.
You know. Just looking at Raducanu's bloody knee.
So to have Emma Raducanu and Leila Fernandez be players who elicit joy, unadulterated joy, both while they play and for everyone watching them play, just felt like what everyone needed, really.
While we're on the subject of joy, can I talk about the original nine, or the six members of the original nine that were able to be in New York? Can I talk about them doing the coin toss?
Please.
And Billie Jean King handing over the trophy?
Please.
Poetry. When I said talk about it, I meant sort of provide a springboard, Matt, for you to for you to fill in the detail.
Well, I thought you had a really good tweet about this the other day. You know, the fact that the original nine were honoured, weren't they, on semi-final night at the US Open. There was a really lovely ceremony with them at the start. And, you know, you said tonight's all about the future of sport, of tennis, because it's two 18-year-olds getting through to the final. And that's what the original nine created. A future for women's tennis, the possibility for Emma Raducanu and Leila Fernandez to be on this stage and doing what they do. So it does feel poetic. It does feel right. And the fact that Billie Jean King was the one handing out the trophy also feels very right, because I think there's going to be a lot of, when did you think Emma Raducanu could get to the top or could win this title? But Billie Jean King was the first person I heard say that Emma Raducanu could go right to the top of tennis.
You can no longer say sitting in that exact seat, because it's new sofa.
It's new upgraded corner sofa.
But sitting approximately where you are now, sort of spatially.
Yes. And look, I thought, wow, how can you possibly know that? After seeing her for three or four matches at Wimbledon. Billie Jean King knows.
Ask her anything.
And she knows.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Can we talk about the speeches? In particular, can we talk about Leila Fernandez's speech? Not that Emma Raducanu's wasn't pure joy, but Leila Fernandez provided possibly the moment of the night, certainly one of the moments of the night when, I mean, she gave a brilliant speech, full stop, anyway, especially given, you know, she'd had that upset over the medical timeout. It ended up being just sort of moments, minutes before the end of the match, didn't it? Because that she ended up closing it out, Raducanu, and composed herself, gave an extremely magnanimous speech, and then took back the microphone at the end and delivered the most graceful tribute to New York on the anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks. It was so perfectly judged. As somebody that had to judge and juggle tonal shifts tonight in our Prime Video coverage of the final, you know, obviously an incredibly celebratory moment for tennis, in particular British tennis, but also with somber elements to the evening. There was this ceremony to memorialize those that died in 9/11, and you know, it was a feature of the evening, and I had all day to prepare for those tonal shifts, and yeah, Leila Fernandez had spent all day preparing for a tennis match. Maybe she had prep for that, I don't know. Even if she had, she's 19, and it was wonderful. It was astonishing, really.
Yeah, it blew me away. It's one of the toughest things to do, that post-loss speech after a Grand Slam final. And the empathy, the perspective, the class. The words she said were, "I know on this day it was especially hard for New York and everyone around the United States. I just want to say that I hope I can be as strong and as resilient as New York has been these past 20 years." Just perfect words.
Yeah, and if there's one word I would pick out to describe her tennis, it might just be resilient. So, yeah, goodness me. It was such a moment. It was such a moment. And then we got to see Billie Jean King hand over that trophy to Emma Raducanu and her just sort of blissfully parade around the Arthur Ashe Stadium with Virginia Wade just beaming from the stands. I mean, the look of pride on Virginia Wade was everything, Matt. It was absolutely everything. I was sat alongside Anki Othervong in the studio, who's Emma Raducanu's Billie Jean King Cup captain, and we had to give her quite a lot of time to compose herself before coming on air because you just veer between all the different emotions. It's so hard to avoid cliche. The hyperbole train left the station several rounds ago. It's just, hey, future Grand Slams have a tough act to follow.
Gosh, once you've seen this, how can anything live up to this Grand Slam?
And it's been so difficult to get. We had a bit of time after the match, because obviously with Prime Video we came off air with Channel 4 a little bit earlier, but carried on our review of the match and analysis on Prime Video, and we got the luxury of not having an off air time as a non-linear broadcaster, so we had a bit of time to delve into how Emma Raducanu's life is going to change now. She had a taster of that at Wimbledon, but not even close to what is about to come. And we got to chat to Jim Courier about it a little bit, and everybody seems to say the same thing in terms of it's all about the people you have around you. There's nothing wrong with enjoying the moment and embracing the opportunities that come your way. You know, that doesn't mean you're losing focus or, you know, not interested in being a tennis player anymore. There's time. She has time. And we've got to not expect too much too soon from her. Maybe not even expect anything immediately. I don't know. She's up to 23 in the world now, but we do need to be wary that this is about as big a life change as an athlete can sort of suddenly and jarringly experience, and it's going to take some adjustment. And obviously, feeling the way we all feel tonight, we're going to have an appetite for more of it. But we need to be careful.
Yeah, and I think Raducanu's last few months have already shown the importance of giving her some space and giving her some time. I mean, there hasn't been a lot of time, obviously, since Wimbledon. But the way that tournament ended for her and everything that happened there, the attention she received and the horrible criticism she received from some, and the way the match ended against Tomjanovic, what a lesson to give young, talented people space and time that they need and help them find their way. Because that is, I think, what has happened with Raducanu in these last couple of months. You know, she didn't play the sort of really big tournaments, did she, between Wimbledon and the US Open. She played much smaller tournaments and sort of went out of the spotlight a little bit and won matches and built confidence, built form, built her game. And look what she can do when she has sort of great people around her and the conditions in which to flourish, you know. And absolutely, she now needs time, because the level she's produced is going to be making everyone think she should be sort of competing for every Grand Slam from here on in. We just know that isn't realistic, really. I absolutely think she has the game to be a mainstay at the top of this sport for a long time, of course. But let's not pile on expectations straight away. The fact she's achieved this already is incredible.
Yeah. 23 in the world. She's going to get direct entry into everything. I had to double check today that the rules of the WTA final don't mirror those of the ATP, that Grand Slam champions gain automatic entry into the finals regardless of their ranking. I thought the WTA were looking at changing that, but not so, apparently. But yeah, she's going to be able to play and do whatever she wants now. And I just want her to keep loving tennis the way that she so clearly does at the moment, because that's what's infectious. It's the joy. And we're watching. I can't. I've barely looked at you this podcast, Matt, because I can't stop looking at it. It's completely magnetic. Emma Raducanu is the US Open champion. I'm looking at her lying on her back, sobbing, her chest heaving up and down, her coaching box jumping up and down. Andrew Richardson, I've never heard him speak, Matt. Job did he think he was signing up for?
We've never heard him speak. We've never seen him without a cap on.
He might be a genius.
Yeah, yeah. Quite possibly the greatest coach in tennis.
Ever?
No one knows.
No one knows anything. I know he was Tim Emmons' best man. I know the weird stuff that David reeled off about him on the podcast the other day. And that's it. He's a very, very cool cucumber in the players' box. He's probably just dazed and confused about what on earth has happened to his life over the past few weeks. Just bonkers. Absolutely bonkers. We kept on going to Tim Hemman courtside after the match, because I really feel like Emma Raducanu has enabled Tim Hemman to fall in love with tennis again over the course of the last couple of weeks. Not that he didn't like and enjoy tennis, but it's not the same after you retire. And I've never seen Tim Henman like this. He was just completely enlivened and emotional in a way I'd never seen him before. And watching him try and find the words to sum it up, he just kept saying, "It's a joke. It's a joke." And yeah, you'd have been laughed out of town for even suggesting it 2 weeks ago.
Oh, there would have been 100 names you would have put ahead of Emma Raducanu. She was the 31st seed in qualifying. I mean, it is a joke. And yet, now that she's won it, actually, it really feels like the last three US Open champions, you know, they're all different, but Naomi Osaka, Bianca Andreescu, they've all felt like they had the potential to change the sport kind of forever or to move it on. And Osaka has done that in many ways, and Andreescu's obviously not really had the chance since winning the US Open, but I'm still a huge believer in her. And yeah, I mean, Raducanu's the same. People don't do this. They don't do this. It is unprecedented.
It's nice to hear unprecedented used in a way not related to a global pandemic, isn't it? That is the joy that Emma Raducanu has brought us tonight. Look, we will be... I think we'll just probably find a way to mention Emma Raducanu and this win in every podcast we do from now on, but we will certainly be talking about it again when David's back on the show, hopefully tomorrow. Yeah, don't you worry. This joy, we're going to squeeze everything out of it that we possibly can. We got a men's final tomorrow, Matt. And it's another massive slice of history on the line, a very, very different slice of history on the line. It's quite difficult for us to have a really balanced view about how much that slice of history is currently being overshadowed. Obviously, here in the UK, it's being overshadowed by an order of magnitude, but obviously that is far less elsewhere. It does feel to me like Raducanu in this women's final is the story of this US Open. That might change tomorrow night if Novak Djokovic does what he's trying to do and completes the calendar slam. But it is very Novak Djokovic, isn't it? That he deserves the limelight. He deserves the spotlight for this, and he still can't quite get the whole thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've now been distracted by...
They're singing Sweet Caroline. We can't hear it, but we know that's what's happening.
Yes. Sorry, I've done it again. We're on to Novak Djokovic and I'm talking about something else. No, absolutely. I think if he does it, it will suddenly hit everyone. And I think he will do it as well. We've obviously got the Australian Open from earlier this year as a precedent. And Djokovic won that match very easily, really. After quite a tight first set, he really showed his superiority in that match. But does that one match count sort of more than the general sort of trend that Medvedev has been on, which feels like getting closer? Does it supersede the tennis that Medvedev has played this tournament, which I think is probably pretty much the best in the tournament? Djokovic has had moments of absolute brilliance in matches, particularly against Berrettini and at times against Zverev. But sort of consistent round by round, Medvedev has been awesome in this tournament. And I really do think he does have the game to go toe-to-toe with Djokovic. But I've seen him go toe-to-toe with Djokovic at the ATP Finals, and Djokovic checked out. He's not going to do that tomorrow. This is the guy I already think is the best male player of all time, putting his everything into trying to achieve something. And I don't know how you stop that.
I feel the same. Were it not for the calendar slam, were it just a regular Grand Slam final and everything else were the same, I think I'd be picking Medvedev tomorrow. I think he's ready. The fact that I'm, spoiler alert, not going to pick Medvedev is nothing to do with Medvedev. Mm. I really think he's ready. I think he's going to do it. I think he's very unfortunate about the circumstances in which he's running into Djokovic tomorrow, because I think he's ready to beat Djokovic even in a Grand Slam final. I just think Djokovic's will has been such a feature of his success and career. And I know that's completely unscientific, but his will be at its absolute peak in this final. I just can't see him having it wrestled from him in the final. It's been striking me over the past few days, the more I think about it, how massive it is that Medvedev was the second seed and therefore inevitably drawn in the opposite side of the draw to him, therefore couldn't face him until the final, because I do think now he's got to the final, he's not letting it go. Not that there hasn't been the will and the defiance up to this point, there has, but it's different in the final. He's not getting this far not to do it. And I know that's completely unscientific. Oh, but what about Medvedev's brilliant backhand and how well he moves, and the court speed is a service paradise, and I know all of that. And if it weren't for the history and the fact that this is now or never for Djokovic to do the thing that he wants to do more than anything, I'd be going with all of that science and logic. But it's Djokovic, and I don't think he's going to let this go. He might have to, you know, leave his bleeding socks on the court. I think Medvedev will take him maybe to the limits for it.
Mm. Yeah, I completely agree with everything you've said. And I think it's a shift, because I think going into the tournament, I thought that if there was going to be something that stopped Djokovic, it might be the weight of it. It might be the occasion, the pressure, the history he's going for. And yet now he's got through the first six rounds and he's in the final. That's the element that I think makes him unstoppable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's brilliantly put.
So there's all... And look, I think that quote he gave on the court the other night after beating Zverev, I'm going to play this match like it's my last. I'm going to put my heart, body, soul, mind into it. That's one of the great on-court tennis quotes I can think of. That is an ominous message. That is a guy laying it out there, laying out his goals, laying out how much something means to him. And as you said, Djokovic's career is defined in many ways by his will and his ability to win these big, big matches. And I'm not going to back against him in the biggest of all.
Mm. It could be epic, though.
I really, really think and hope it will be. Because Medvedev, I believe, will bring it. I don't think he played well in the Australian Open final.
No, he really didn't. And I think, you know, like that quote he gave when he lost at Wimbledon, this just isn't...
Isn't acceptable.
I just don't think he'll let that happen again, Medvedev. I think he could drag some Djokovic just to some dark places to win, but Djokovic is more prepared than anybody in history to go to the dark places.
Yeah, and we are expecting it to be hot, I believe.
Yeah, apparently 10 degrees hotter than we had today.
Which I don't think helps either.
No, they both hate the heat. I feel you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that necessarily has a particular bearing on the match, really, because neither of them will enjoy it, but they'll grit their teeth through it, I think.
Yeah, I think at least it shouldn't be sunny on the court at that point of the day. I think it will at least be in shade.
Yes, and from a selfish viewer's point of view, that is very important because the shadow is problematic. And the players don't like it either, PS, but I'm just being extremely self-important about that issue. Other things happened at the Billie Jean King National Tennis Centre today that are pretty momentous and probably deserve a lot more time than we're going to end up giving them, just because, like, the most momentous thing ever also happened to happen today. I covered the men's doubles final yesterday that we neglected to mention on the podcast. Apologies for that. We've all been in a bit of a mania, a Raducanu mania over the past 24 hours or so. Joe Salisbury and Rajiv Ram won their first US Open title, their second Grand Slam title together. They won the Australian Open doubles title last year. They beat Jamie Murray, Bruno Suarez in the final. Really good final, actually. Three-setter. Amazing to have British representation on both sides of the net. Ram and Salisbury, though, they're a really good doubles team. They've got kind of the perfect vibe together as a team. Rajiv Ram just seems like the coolest guy in town, playing in front of his home fans. Meant loads to him, but he took it all in such a relaxed way. And Joe Salisbury was feeding off the crowd energy of, you know, having an American partner, therefore being a, you know, an honorary American. And tough one for Jamie Murray and Bruno Suarez. They wanted it. But it's still a massive result for them to get into the final. Their reunion together hadn't been a disaster at all, but, you know, hadn't been just, oh, we're back together, we're going to start winning Grand Slams again. So, massive result. Delightful scenes with little Noah Suarez on the court. We like Noah Suarez. He is a cutie. And he didn't seem to know whether his dad had won or lost. Just delighted to be there.
Yeah.
Got to hold a plate. Had very different feelings to Goran Ivanišević about plates. So, yeah, that was Joe Salisbury yesterday. Today, he won the mixed doubles final. He's done the doubles double, and that hasn't been done since Bob Bryan did it in 2010, which, again, isn't as great a stat as it should be, is it?
No, but he is the first Brit to do it, isn't he? In the Open era, anyway, for sure. Yeah, he won with Desiree Kravchik, and they beat Marcelo
Arevalo.
Arevalo from El Salvador.
Mm-hmm.
And
Juliana Olmos from Mexico.
Mm.
I'm sure there's a really good story around Marcelo Arevalo. I mean, I don't know of any other tennis players from El Salvador.
No.
Mixed doubles finalists relived.
Coming your way.
Coming your way,
coming
potentially.
Your way after we've had a sleep.
Yeah. We had some very significant wheelchair results today.
Yes. Gordon Reid and Alfie Hewitt became the first men to win all four wheelchair slam doubles titles in the same year. You know, they've completed the calendar slam.
Sorry, Novak. The calendar slam's been done.
It's been done.
Old news. Get a new story.
They beat Gustavo Fernandez and
Shingo Kaneda,
6-2, 6-1. It's their eighth successive slam title together.
Bananas.
Extraordinary. Hewitt goes for the singles title tomorrow when he plays Kaneda. That's a repeat of last year's final. And there's also two players, Dida
De Groot.
And
said that on air on Amazon on Prime Video today.
Proud moment.
Yeah. The noises in my ear when I did it. Ooh.
Didn't know you could do that. Yeah. her and Dylan Alcott are not only going for the calendar slam, they're going for the golden slam.
Oh, God. Putting Djokovic in the shade again.
Never been done in wheelchair tennis, and about 40 years of wheelchair tennis. And that is largely because of scheduling and the fact that these tournaments haven't always existed, like Esther Vergeer, for example, who we did a show on towards the start of the year, you know, one of the most dominant athletes of all time, she never had the chance to play Wimbledon in singles because the event was only added in 2016 after she'd retired. And the quad division, which is what Dylan Alcott competes in, that was only added to Roland Garros and Wimbledon very recently in 2019. But De Roet, we'll go with it. She's won the last four slams in a row. She's going for her fourth straight US Open title, and she faces Yui Kamiji in the final. And Dylan Alcott, this is not the first time he's come to New York aiming for history. In 2019, he was going for the calendar slam, but he lost to Andy Lapthorne in the final. And he faces Niels Vink in the final tomorrow as he attempts to complete that slice of history. So great, great stories and matches in the wheelchair tennis. And also tomorrow is the women's doubles final with Coco Gauff and Katie McNally, Coco playing Sam Stosur and Zhang Shuai. Who
I love both.
Great teams.
Love the stories on both sides of the net there. You've got Sam Stosur that persuaded Zhang Shuai not to retire, that all the loveliness that ensued there, and they won the Australian Open title, didn't they? Was that last year? Time,
it was 2019,
Time is a vortex.
It?
But they were lovely scenes, and Makoko were, they're all the feels, aren't they? They're great. And they'll have the crowd with them, and that's going to be brilliant, I think. So yeah, that's all tomorrow. We're on air at 5:45 p.m. with the women's doubles final, and then we've got Djokovic against Medvedev from 9. David will be hopefully commentating. We wish you well, David. On goodness me, it's been nearly 10 years of this podcast, and we've never had anything like this. I hope we're doing the podcast for many, many more years to come, and I feel confident when I say that we'll never have anything like this again. And I hope we have done a halfway adequate job of trying to sum up our feelings about it, because I'm not sure it's possible to do an adequate job of summing up.
It's bigger than words.
The achievement.
It's one
and
of those
the moment.
Which is bigger than words.
It is. Which is a problem.
A shame.
When you when you deal in words. But we have done our very best for you, and it has been our pleasure to do so. We've got mascots. Zeus, I've played a blinder for you.
You've done all you can.
The whole damn tournament. I'm Andy Murray in the era of the big three. It's unjust, and history won't recognise me the way it ought to. Because I've gone and done it again today, and I've not scored the points that that I should have done. Anyway, David Law has Rogue. Matt has Scousel Mousel. They also triumphed today because they copied me. Billie Jean has Billie Jean King. Every time we've mentioned Billie Jean King on this podcast, she's poked her head out of the teepee, curiously. We've got Chris Albert Lee, who I used to think was a top bloke until he peskily started beating me in the predictions competition this tournament. And I can't seem to topple him because he got one lucky Alcaraz prediction. And it's been plain sailing for him ever since. So, Chris Albert Lee, you're a sort of mediocre bloke in my eyes at the moment. And we have shout-outs, Matt. Who are they for?
Carol Corley.
Carol. Like Yvonne Goolagon Corley.
Correct. I was hoping you'd go
there. Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. We love that. Hello, Carol. Thanks for your support.
We have, and you'll like this as well, Catherine Lau.
Oh, C or K?
C.
Oh, all the hits. Thank you very much, Catherine. Great name. Thanks for your support.
And last but definitely not least, we have friend of the pod, Tony Mabey.
Tony. Hello, Tony. Tony tweeted a lovely thing tonight. And
Tony is one of the loveliest people I've
Tony's
ever met.
Good people. And oh, Tony, we thank you very much for your support. I don't, are there any tennis Tonys?
Tony Roach.
Oh, hello. There's definitely lots of maybe jokes.
Yes. You made one. Definitely lots of maybe jokes.
I did. I accidentally did. Oh, dear. Tony, thank you ever so much for your support. We really appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow with one last daily US Open podcast. What on earth is coming next? Don't know. Can't wait.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.